नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Amidst these divisions or varshas is the varsha named Ilabrita, which is situated in the middle of the whirl of the lotus. Within Ilabrita varsha is Sumeru mountain, which is made of gold. Sumeru mountain is like the Parikarp of the lotus-like Bhumandala planetary system. The mountain's height is the same as the width of Jambudvip, or in other words, 100,000 yojanas, 800,000 miles. Of that, 16,000 yojanas, 128,000 miles are within the earth, and therefore the mountain's height above the earth is 84,000 yojanas, 672,000 miles. The mountain's width is 32,000 yojanas, 256,000 miles at its summit, and 16,000 yojanas at its base. Just north of Ilavata Varsha, and going further northward, one after another are three mountains named Nila, Sweta, and Shringavan. These mark the borders of the three varshas named Ramyaka, Hiranmaya, and Kuru. And separate them from one another. The width of these mountains is 2,000 yojanas, 16,000 miles. Lengthwise, they extend east and west to the beaches of the ocean of salt water. Going from south to north, the length of each mountain is one-tenth that of the previous mountain, but the height of them all is the same. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this regard, Madhvacharya quotes the following verses from the Brahmanda Purana. Yatha bhagavate tuktam bhovanam kosha lakshanam tasya virodhato yojyam anya granthantare stitam mandode puranam ceva vyatyasam chit kshira sagare rahu soma ravinam cha Mandaladvi gunotkitam vinayvasaravam uneyam yojana bedato tritu. It appears from these verses that aside from the sun and moon, there is an invisible planet called Rahu. The movements of Rahu cause both solar and lunar eclipses. We suggest that the modern expeditions attempting to reach the moon are mistakenly going to Rahu. Today, from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 16, entitled A Description of Jambudvip. Texts 6 and 7 and 8. Shukadeva Goswami was asked by Parikshit Maharaj about the subject of the Lord's universal form. In this context, it is the Lord's expansion of material creation. Krishna explains in Gita, Bhumirapo nalo vayu kamano budu evacha ahankara iti ame bina prakriti rashtita. That the external energy that is expanding from him is composed of these eight elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and the ego. Aparayam mitashvanyam prakritim virimetara. Jivam, that besides this external energy, there is a spiritual nature which is sustaining this entire universe. It is the nature of the soul. Srila Prabhupada often cited from the invocation of Ishopanishad, Om Purnam Ada Purnam Idam, that the Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, and therefore all emanations that have their origin in the Absolute Truth are also perfect and complete. Parikshit Maharaj is very eager to hear about material creation. This might sound confusing to some, because he's going to die in just a few days, and he wants to detach himself completely from material existence. If we have any attachment to material world, we must take another birth in this material world. If we have no attachments to the material world, then we can attain Brahman realization, liberation. If we have complete attachment to the service of the lotus feet of Krishna, then we can go back home, back to Godhead. According to our consciousness at the time of death, Krishna says, Antakali chamameva smaran makva kalevaram. We will attain that destination without fail. Most devotees, when they're about to die, they want to hear about Krishna directly. They want to hear about Krishna's pastimes, hear Krishna's names. Now, fifth canto, that means Sukadeva Goswami is only about perhaps 4.5 days before he has to leave his body. Why isn't he asking for the nectar of the Ras Lila? Why is he asking about material creation? He wants to get out of material creation. He wants to forget material creation. If he has any thought of material world, if he has any thought or attachment to the material world, then he has to take birth again. That is our philosophy. That is what Krishna is teaching. And Parikshit Maharaj, he knows. He knows the philosophy greater than any scholar today. He's the grandson of Arjuna. In the womb of his mother, he saw Krishna personally appear before him and save his life. He was a very, very highly realized person. Srila Prabhupada explains so nicely how when he was a little child, he would not play with toys. He would worship deities. That was his play, to offer divine loving service to Krishna, because he loved Krishna. From the womb of his mother, he had the darshan of Krishna. He fell in love with Krishna at that time. Krishna's all attractive. He's Parikshit. As soon as he came out of the womb, he was looking for Krishna. Baby was just looking for Krishna. Not his mother and his father and milk and all of that. Just looking for Krishna. He was absorbed in Krishna, always. From the time he was within his mother's body and all his life. And due to a slight mistake, he was cursed to die in 7 days. And he wanted to completely detach himself from the material world. Otherwise, why didn't he just stay home and have some Brahmins come to the palace, and he would lay in his nice, soft, kingly bed, king-sized bed, and everybody would be chanting mantras and discussing Krishna's leelas. Isn't that the way most people would want to leave their body? But he wanted no part of it. He wanted to completely extricate himself from material existence and material consciousness. Therefore, he left his palace. He left all his fine clothes. He left his whole family. He did not allow any of his family members to come with him. We don't read about his wife in the audience. We don't read about his children in the audience. There's only great sages in the audience. Vyasadeva, Narada, Vishwamitra, Vasishtha, Bhardwaj. These are the people he was sitting with. On the bank of the Ganges. He didn't go to the garden behind his palace, which was certainly very, very extraordinary, beautiful. He went to Mother Ganga, where he just sat on the ground for 7 days just to hear about Krishna. Why? Because he wanted to totally extricate himself from any material consciousness. He wanted to absolutely absorb himself beyond this material body on the lotus feet of the Lord. So why is he asking Shukadeva Goswami for these very detailed, complex descriptions and measurements of material universe? Would you ask that question? Shukadeva Goswami is like the cow, and Parikshit Maharaj is like the calf, and Srimad Bhagavatam is like the milk. So according to Parikshit Maharaj's desire, Shukadeva Goswami is simply answering his questions. Why? Even our minds are boggled when we read some of these descriptions. So complex, so detailed. Srila Prabhupada explains that the science of studying the universe was long before even Shukadeva Goswami. He's explaining exact measurements. Why? Because Parikshit Maharaj, he understood very clearly that the universal form of the Lord, which is constituted of the three modes of material nature, tamaguna, rajaguna, and sattvaguna. That they are all emanations of Krishna. Krishna tells in Gita, Trivadam Narakashyetam. No, I'm sorry. Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. Nirdvanvo Nitya Shatvashto Niryogakshema Atmavan. That the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature, Arjuna. Rise above these modes. Be transcendental to all of them. Be established in the eternal spiritual nature of the self. Now, this is what Krishna told his grandfather. And here we find the grandson asking all about the three modes of material nature. And Shukadeva Goswami spends, out of the 7 days, which is all he has, Shukadeva Goswami, he gave adequate time to describe this. Why? Rise above the modes, and he's asking all about the modes. Detailed descriptions of the modes. And he's absorbed. He's absorbed in hearing everything that Goswami is saying. And he's perfectly Krishna conscious. Because everything is emanating from Krishna. Everything is essentially spiritual. Krishna is the supreme spirit. And therefore nothing can emanate from the supreme spirit except what is spiritual. Can darkness emanate from the sun? Darkness only exists in the absence of the sun. So whatever is coming from Krishna is pure. Whatever comes from Krishna is perfect and complete. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. Therefore, the meditation on the universal form of the Lord is the meditation on seeing the material elements which are all manifesting according to various interactions of the three modes of material nature. It is the body of Krishna. It's divine. Daivi yeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Mami vamye prapadyante mayameta tarantite. Krishna tells. From his point of view, everything is divine. Krishna says to Arjuna, this divine nature, consisting of three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. But those who surrender to me can easily cross beyond. Now, daivi, or divine, means spiritual. Yes? When we say his divine grace, that's the highest title. It's the ultimate title a person could have, his divine grace. That means pure spiritual grace is flowing through his life to whoever he meets. So divine is pure. Divine is spiritual. Daivi. So Krishna is saying that this divine energy, this pure transcendent energy consisting of the three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. Krishna is saying you have to overcome it. If it's divine, why should you want to overcome it? You should want to surrender to it. But Krishna's saying, no, it's the source of all miseries, it's the source of all problems. If you want to overcome it, you have to surrender to me. There's no other way. It's very interesting. Why he says divine nature? Why he says divine energy? I mean, spiritual. And he's saying, you have to overcome it. It's the source of all miseries. It's especially composed of passion and ignorance. Those two modes. Some goodness too. Because material energy is really our perception. From Krishna's point of view, everything is spiritual. There's the external spiritual energy and the internal spiritual energy. They serve different functions, but they are both Krishna's. They're both divine. So a devotee, like Maharaj Parikshit, wants to learn how to see everything in relationship to Krishna. Because the reality is, however much we're trying to be Krishna conscious, and however much we're trying to overcome material nature and forget all material things, still, as long as you have eyes, you see material things. As long as you have ears, you hear material things. Yes? Just like, for instance, we're sitting in the class today, we're hearing Bhagavad Katha. But if somebody starts blowing off fireworks, they're doing it for totally material purposes. Or maybe sometimes we hear the traffic horns. Very obnoxious sounds in India. Of course, some people like it. The truck drivers have signs behind their truck saying, sound horn. Gives them a feeling of importance when somebody goes, if you don't honk your horn, they may feel that you're not acknowledging their existence. So we may be listening, but still, there's so many sounds coming. You hear the horns? It's a material. You can't not hear it. When we go out to spread Krishna consciousness in the streets, or when we go to work, we go outside, how could we not see material things? We're seeing all kinds of things, consisting of the three modes of material nature, being utilized for sense gratification. So the fact is, however much you want to be a devotee, still, we want to fix our mind on Krishna, but there's a problem. We are in this material world, and we do have senses that are made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So therefore, we perceive these things. You can't not. Even if you go to the Himalayas, high in the mountains, still you'll hear airplanes flying over you. Still so many material disturbances may be there. So yes, Parikshit Maharaj is still seeing through his eyes. He's still seeing the world of elements. And therefore, he wants complete Krishna consciousness. He wants Sukadev Goswami to explain the spiritual essence of material existence and every atomic particle. Nothing exists that is separate from Krishna. Illusion is when our consciousness is separate from Krishna. The problem is not that we're in this world physically. The problem is we're in this world consciously, forgetting Krishna. The ultimate instruction of Vedas is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So while we're in this world, how to always remember Krishna? That means we have to learn to remember Krishna even in this world. And that is what the universal form is about. To understand all material ingredients of this cosmic manifestation, how they are related to Krishna. Then even the world does not become a distraction from our meditation on Krishna's pastimes. Then this world does not become a distraction from our chanting of the holy name. This world actually helps us to remember Krishna. So Parikshit Maharaj is being explained by Shukadev Goswami in very, very precise detail. Material creation, which most of us really don't care anything about, most devotees just skip over this section of Srimad Bhagavatam because they're looking for the nectar. But according to Lord Chaitanya, every syllable of every word, of every sloka, of every chapter, of every canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is nectar, including this. It's all nectar. Why? Because it's flowing from the mouth of Shukadeva Goswami. Shukadeva Goswami is an eternal resident of Goloka Vrindavan. He's the son of Vyasadeva, the disciple of Srila Vedavyas, grand disciple of Narada Muni. He's an extraordinary personality, so highly realized and pure in heart, totally Krishna conscious. Anything that comes from his mouth is nectar. Even the various classified descriptions of material creation which bewilder our mind. Now we hear about this and we're bored. Yes? Reading this chapter and some other chapters of fifth canto, sometimes we become very bored. We become very restless. Either we skip over it or we somehow or other just tolerate going through it as a matter of duty. But Shukadeva Goswami is ecstatically describing these things. And Parikshit Maharaj is in rapt attention, ecstatically hearing. Why? Because they're tasting nothing but Krishna. Yes, this is Krishna's creation. They see everything in relation to Krishna. When Shukadeva Goswami is describing the height of Mount Nila, Sweta, and Sringavan, and he's describing the various varshas, Ramyaka, Hiranmaya, and Kuru, and how they're separated from one another. He's thinking of Rasaraj, Krishna, the Lord of the Gopis. This is all emanating from him. This is Krishna's creation. How wonderful. It's Krishna's body within this existence. So sometimes it is explained that the description of the universal form is for materialistic people who are too much materially oriented to really fix their mind on Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's names. So it's a way to somehow or other connect them to Krishna through material nature. Yes, for a materialistic person, that's true. Now, Parikshit Maharaj, on one level, he's asking this question for the sake of such materialistic people in this world, because he's such a compassionate person. He's thinking about everybody's welfare. When Parikshit Maharaj is, although he has only 5 days to live, 7 days to live, the questions he's asking is not only for his own personal benefit, but he's asking questions that are the benefit for all of humanity. Such an incredibly selfless person. Why is he asking questions for our sake when he's about to die? We have so many years to live. He has 7 days. Why is he asking questions for our benefit? Because what pleases Krishna is the ultimate absorption in spiritual life. And Krishna is pleased by the compassionate heart of a devotee who's concerned with the welfare of others. His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, up until the last couple weeks of his life in this world, he was preaching, he was giving classes, he was communicating with so many people, so many visitors. Why? People were asking him the same question. Why don't you just absorb yourself in Krishna? Why are you giving yourself so much for so many months when you're on your deathbed? Because I want to please Prabhupada. That's why. Prabhupada is pleased when we're giving Krishna consciousness to others. The perfection of Krishna consciousness is to please Krishna. And this is what pleases Krishna. He was preaching to his last breath. At a certain point, when his body was in such a state, Krishna revealed to him that his preaching to others would be to withdraw from all external activities and completely be absorbed in hearing and chanting in a very selected few people to associate with. But even that he did for the purpose of preaching. He was giving of himself until it was physically impossible, and then he absorbed himself in that way. Because he understood the perfection of life is to please Guru and Krishna. And Krishna is pleased by the compassionate efforts of his devotees toward others. So yes, Parikshit Maharaj is asking these questions for our benefit. He's thinking about you and me when he's about to die. And Krishna's very pleased. But not only that, but when he's hearing these descriptions, he's asking with enthusiasm for our sake, but also he's relishing it unlimitedly. It's not that he's asking for our sake and he's falling asleep until the 10th canto comes. He's in rapt attention. He wants to hear this nectar because he's Krishna conscious. Because he's seeing everything in relation to the Lord of Vrindavan. Prapanchikatiya budya hari sambandhi bhaktana. Rupa Goswami explained, what is spiritual? It is a conception of spirituality that Mayavadis and impersonalists have, they cannot conceive of such an idea. It's so far above them. Rupa Goswami is saying that to discard or reject anything material that can be used in Krishna's service is incomplete renunciation. That everything has its place in Krishna consciousness if we're Krishna conscious. And Srila Prabhupada, in this regard, he explains so nicely how management is a pure spiritual activity if we're Krishna conscious. Now, personally, I haven't been blessed with that realization yet. But we understand it's true with faith. Management, Prabhupada is explaining, we're dealing with so many material elements. Prabhupada's flying to Japan. And the types of people he was dealing with in Japan were high-level materialists. And he's discussing paper. And he's discussing binding of books. And he's discussing printing. And he's negotiating costs. And Prabhupada was an expert negotiator. He would have Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, Prabhupada would tell him, you say this, I'll say this, you say this, I'll say this. And these are top world class executives, finance people. Japanese are very shrewd when it comes to business. They may have lost the World War II, but they're very much conquering America by just economically. Yes. So many automobiles are Japanese. And even the American automobiles are made in Japan. And they own so much property. Most of Hawaii estate. I believe the Japanese own the Empire State Building.
which is the symbolic building of America. Massive, massive billions of dollars of real estate in Manhattan Island. Just buying everything. Very intelligent. Very, very shrewd. And here's Srila Prabhupada, sitting with some of the top shrewd financial wizards of Japan, who are expert at exploiting people for as much money as they can. And Prabhupada totally bewildered them. He totally bewildered them. They gave a price and Prabhupada said, "No, you will donate it. It's for Krishna." What? After all this time? After all this negotiation through mail, they've come to close the deal and Prabhupada just drops that bomb on them. They've already spent so much money preparing for this moment of closing the deal. And Prabhupada's just giving such a low price. Nobody would ever ask such a thing. Prabhupada was asking such a low price that nobody... It's an insult to them, practically. And Prabhupada was just totally, "No, you have to do it. It's for Krishna." And then he had Tamal Krishna Maharaj say certain things and certain things. Anyways, ultimately, whatever Prabhupada wanted to pay is what they accepted. So Prabhupada's explaining this haggling over money. He said, because it's for Krishna, it's pure devotional service. Now, most of these yogis in Himalayas, there's no way they would go to Japan to meet these people. Most of the Babajis and Vrindavan, they would not go to such a place to be involved in such intense, passionate negotiations over money. And then dealing with the management of it all. Prabhupada has explained we should not give it up because it's Krishna conscious. Because it's for the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement, it is divine. Even though the elements may be the three modes, maybe earth, water, fire, air, ether, and we're using the mind and the intelligence, and we're dealing with so many people's false egos. It's spiritual because it's for Krishna. And Rupa Goswami says if you reject these things when they could be used in Krishna's service, then your renunciation is defective. Krishna created this world so that everything would be used in his service. But very few people are willing to do that. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he really set that standard. He set the standard in such a way that sometimes he pushed it right in people's face so that they would get the message. Came to Vrindavan, he came to Radha Kund driving a big car, wearing shoes. Haribo. It's not what he usually did. He was usually very, very simple. But he did it just to really show these people that you people are just incomplete in your renunciation. You're sitting here just eating some little roti every now and then, and you're sleeping on the ground. But what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? What is Rupa Goswami? What is Raghunath Das Goswami? They live very simple, but what did they teach? To use everything in Krishna's service. Transcendental. So Parikshit Maharaj,
He wants us to learn how to see everything in relation to Krishna. Everything that the senses perceive, we could remember Krishna. But he's also tasting nectar, hearing about it. Because he's remembering Krishna. If you love Krishna, who's standing in his threefold bending form, playing his flute, whatever you see, you'll remember Krishna. It will remind you of him because it's coming from him. How wonderful. Just like Prabhupada was asked, how do we always remember Krishna in this world? Srila Prabhupada said, you see my spectacles sitting on the desk? When you see my spectacles, what do you think? You immediately think, this is Srila Prabhupada's spectacles. You can't not think that. Therefore, you're seeing Prabhupada in his spectacles. And when you see the spectacles, you don't just see the spectacles. You see Prabhupada's form in those spectacles. You hear his voice in those spectacles. You remember his instructions in those spectacles. You remember his praise, his encouragement and his chastisement in those spectacles. You're actually seeing Prabhupada. You're hearing Prabhupada. You're experiencing Prabhupada because you're remembering him. So to always remember Krishna means that everything should remind us of Krishna in a very positive way. We see Krishna's eternal, as we become attached to the beautiful threefold bending form of Krishna, everything reminds us only of that. When Madhavendra Puri would see a cloud in the sky, when he would see a cloud, he would think of Krishna, who is Ghanasyam. He's a beautiful complexion like a dark cloud. When he would see such a cloud, Madhavendra Puri would start weeping and wailing, and he would fall to the ground unconscious, rolling in the ground with his hair standing on end, screaming out Krishna's names. Now, during the monsoon season, how many of you have that experience? The whole sky is covered with clouds for 4 months at a time. Now, for Madhavendra Puri, what a darshan the monsoons would be in Bombay. He would be rolling on the ground in ecstasy for 4 continuous months. But we're running away from the clouds. Praying to God, let these clouds go away. Yes? Now he's seeing the same cloud we're seeing. Why? He's in ecstasy and we're not. Because he's not just seeing a cloud. He's not just thinking Krishna and the cloud. He's actually seeing Krishna standing under a kadamba tree playing his flute in those clouds. It's not that he sees the cloud as Krishna with his eyes. But the form and the color of the cloud is invoking remembrance of Krishna within his heart, the Krishna of Vrindavan, and puts him immersed in an ocean of Gopi Bhava, the love of the gopis. This is Krishna consciousness. So we cannot do that, but at least through the universal form we could start seeing Krishna in material elements. Krishna tells in Gita, the sun and the moon are my eyes. The rivers are my veins. The mountains are my limbs. Yes, the trees are my hairs. It's a way of remembering Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, in this chapter, in a very important purport, he says that even though a devotee is immersed in so many apparently material things, we will be able to see Krishna in it, to remember Krishna in it, and to be protected from Maya
if we follow the regulative principle of chanting at least 16 rounds attentively every day. Srila Prabhupada makes it very practical. This is the secret. Why does Prabhupada say 16 rounds? Because 16 rounds is what the acharyas have recommended. So not only are we absorbed in the holy name, but because we're doing it according to the instructions of the acharya, we're also pleasing the acharyas. We're under the shelter of the acharyas. Being under shelter is not just a sentimental thing. When we're sincerely, faithfully following the order of the acharyas, we are under their shelter. So if we're following these regulative principles, and we're chanting at least 16 rounds every day, as Srila Prabhupada says, you're under the shelter of the acharyas. You're pleasing the acharyas. And therefore, you will be given the capacity to be protected and even make spiritual progress taking these risks of dealing with so many materialistic things and situations and even people. When a devotee goes out and deals with these material situations, whether it be money or manpower or different facilities, they're actually, if they're doing it for Krishna, with the consciousness of service, and they have the grace of Guru and Krishna by chanting 16 rounds and following principles, then they're making spiritual progress doing that. It's not that they do it and then they come back to the temple to make spiritual progress. They're making spiritual progress indulging in all these things because it's for Krishna's pleasure. So this is all important. And besides that, Srila Prabhupada suspects that they actually went to Rahu. Is there any questions? Any questions?
Krishna, hey Krishna, Krishna Maharaj. Sometimes we do services, very hard working services, but after that, we sit for chanting 16 rounds, so we are not that much attentive, we are very much tired and we feel dizzy. So many times it happens, like we do. So chanting attentively, then after doing service in Krishna consciousness, and what is like, how can I understand this? Our service is how Krishna conscious can be like. How our service can be Krishna conscious, like with Krishna consciousness.
We should be attentive as far as possible. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that inattentive chanting is the basis from which other offenses spring from. We must strive to be attentive. All the other offenses spring from inattentive chanting. Being inattentive means letting material thoughts come into our minds and not endeavoring to bring our mind back to the holy name, but just letting the mind just be tossed by the waves of material conceptions. That is inattentiveness. And laziness, where we become tired and our mind becomes dull and we just to get it done. And another type of inattentiveness is distraction, where specific sense objects just cap capture our attention. And we meditate on that while we're chanting the holy name. Actually meditating on some material sense object while we're chanting the holy name. So these types of inattentiveness we must fight against. We must really take shelter of Krishna to help us to fight against these things. That's important. To chant 16 rounds attentively is the basis of our spiritual lives for an initiated devotee. And yes, we perform many activities in Krishna consciousness, and many of them in that service-oriented spirit may be dealing with apparently material situations for Krishna. So if that's what we're asked to do, we must do it. We can't just be independent. We must do it. Krishna told Arjuna to fight the battle. Arjuna could have said, I can chant more attentively if I don't. He didn't say that. More or less he did in the beginning. But then after Krishna's preached to him, he was willing to fight and go through so many material situations. But it was all for Krishna. So we must wholeheartedly perform our service, whatever it is. But it is essential that we give the proper time and the proper energy and the proper attention to our chanting of the holy names. That is essential.
Maharaj, I was reading in one of the purports of Srila Prabhupada, where he says that the householders invite Brahmanas and Vaishnavas to their home for offering them prasadam. And it is customary for the Brahmanas to go and accept prasadam, Papa says. But he says those who are very serious about spiritual life, they are not obliged to go and accept prasadam, Papa says in that purport. And he also says that because when one accepts in that manner, then one is ready to take the reactions or sins of the householder, he says. So in relation to this, I was also thinking about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who objected to meet King Prataparudra when Advaita Acharya wanted him to meet. He said, I don't want to meet a Vishayi king, you know, one who is living with, you know, women and wealth and the kingly facilities, you know. And Mahaprabhu very sternly opposed meeting him like that. So we hear this verse, Mahaprabhu Rera Bhaktagan Vairagya Pradhan. Yahandaki Pritahana Gaura Bhagavan. So I wanted to know the relationship of this verse to our modern times in which we are living and preaching now. At the same time, we also talk about the Yukta Vairagya principle, you know, where everything should be used in Krishna service. So I feel a sort of contradiction going on in my mind. Sometimes I am caught between the tug of war, whether I should do Vairagya or should I engage in Krishna service.
Hari, thank you. Very thoughtful question.
Lord Chaitanya refused to see Prataparudra Maharaj. But Srila Prabhupada had personal audience with Indira Gandhi. And another thing is Prataparudra Maharaj was begging to see Lord Chaitanya, and Srila Prabhupada called his disciples to arrange the meeting with Indira Gandhi. So Radhe Shyam Prabhu, what is your explanation? Srila Prabhupada was also sannyasi. Yes? And of the two, who would be more detrimental to associate with? The pure Paramhamsa king, Prataparudra Maharaj, or, with all due respect, Indira Gandhi? Because Kaladesha Patra, time, place, and circumstance. The reason Lord Chaitanya would not visit with King Pratapa, the main reason, of course, Niskinchananam Bhagavat, he explained that for a person who is aspiring to cross over the ocean of birth and death to associate with materialistic people is like drinking poison willingly. Yes? But for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, meeting anybody was not drinking poison. He was setting an example. But the thing he emphasized the most about meeting King Prataparuja is people would criticize him. Just like a black spot on a white sheet, everybody will see it. If there's a black spot on a white sheet, people won't say, "Oh, how white the sheet is." They will say, "How black the spot is." That's the way human nature is. People have this inclination to find faults with others. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for preaching purpose, to maintain the sanctity and the integrity of the renounced order, he would not meet him. That's how the society was at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. At that time, swamis would not leave India. Yes? The Prabhupada was traveling all over the world. Prabhupada was traveling in airplanes filled with materialistic people, sitting next to materialistic people. He was going to government places and materialistic colleges. And he was meeting politicians, even corrupt politicians. Because the society today, nobody criticizes a sannyasi to do that. Yes? In fact, they praise him. People would praise Prabhupada for meeting Indira Gandhi. Such an important sannyasi. He had audience with Prime Minister. But 500 years ago, at Lord Chaitanya's time, it was a very highly Brahminical culture in one sense. So time, place, and circumstance, Lord Chaitanya understood that it would be detrimental for preaching to see the king. But Prabhupada understood that it would be conducive to preaching. He was not going to see Indira Gandhi for a sense gratification. He wasn't going there to get a photograph with her. He went there to convince her to give proper visas for his American and European disciples to remain in India. And he went there with a whole plan of how she should rule the state and complete Krishna consciousness. He had a whole manifesto. He didn't have time to read it to her because she was too much in anxiety and misery because she was being politically attacked at the time. But Prabhupada actually had a whole systematic scenario of how she should rule the government. Krishna conscious. So that is Kaladesha Patra. The Acharyas have taught us how really what is the spirit is what's important. The external forms may change according to the time, but what is the spirit that always remains the same? Yes? The spirit that Lord Chaitanya had for not seeing King Prataparudra and the spirit that Prabhupada had for seeing Indira Gandhi was exactly identical. How to best bring integrity, dignity to the Krishna consciousness movement and how to best spread Krishna consciousness to the world. That was the spirit of both. But in different situations, according to the time, place, circumstance, and the people involved, how that materializes will certainly differ. As far as going to people's houses, yes, Prabhupada has said that. In certain situations, Prabhupada would do it anyway if it really had a very tremendous preaching merit. But in general, he followed it quite strictly. He would not just go to anyone's house. But if you read Prabhupada's Lilamrita, when he came to Bombay, he was eating at so many people's houses. And they were not all initiated devotees. They weren't even all Vaishnavas. Now he's saying in his book, we should not accept invitations. But what is the spirit? The spirit is you shouldn't accept an invitation for your sense gratification because you like what they cook. And the fact is, if you eat things that are cooked by non-devotees, the mentality in which it's cooked also affects you. So it is a dangerous thing. So really, we should avoid it. And Prabhupada was telling his disciples to avoid it. But on certain exceptional occasions where there's a very, very important merit to the service that could be done, then the spirit may take prominence over the particular principle or the particular manifestation of the principle. And that is something that Prabhupada was very, very expert at doing. So what is that spirit? That is what is all important. What is the principle? And then we have to apply that spirit and apply that principle according to time, place, and circumstance. Sometimes in the name of orthodoxy, unbelievable service that could please Krishna profusely is denied because of some external rule. Yes? Rupa Goswami explains that two of the reasons for fall down, one is to not follow the rules and regulations, and the other is to follow the rules and regulations with the wrong mentality, without understanding the spirit. Jesus had to deal with that a lot. There was a crippled person, and he cured him and gave him faith in God. But he did it on the Sabbath day, Shabbat. On the day of Sabbath, according to the rules, you're not allowed to do any work. And healing a sick man is work. It's considered work. So he was being condemned by some priests. Why did you break the Sabbath? This means you're bogus, you're not bona fide, you broke the Sabbath. Jesus told him, you understand the letter of the law, but you do not understand the spirit and power behind it. The whole purpose of the Sabbath is to fix your mind in God. So if I'm doing a service for God, then that's the spirit of it. But it wasn't according to the conventional techniques of the time. And Srila Prabhupada did the same thing when he went to the West. He bended a lot of hard and fast Brahminical rules to reach people's hearts, which is a higher principle than following. Prabhupada followed, but Prabhupada followed the spirit perfectly. He did not bend any rules for his sense gratification or under carelessness or neglect. Very systematically he understood what will please Krishna most, what is the spirit behind all the rules and regulations of the scriptures. Samsidhyat Haritoshanam, to please Krishna. To make people Krishna conscious while retaining our own Krishna consciousness pleases Krishna. Does that answer your question? Now, Prabhupada was going to some of these houses in Bombay, and he would take prasad. They would offer it to Krishna, And all his disciples were getting sick like anything. And he was very all right. So he did tell his disciples, you shouldn't do this unless you come with me. Yes. He writes it in book. Don't accept invitations for sense gratification. And it's better not to accept them at all, unless it's an extremely important service that could be rendered. That is Prabhupada's principle. That is why we need Acharya, because the Acharyas teach us how to apply the teachings of the scriptures to our life practically. But I have to end because I have a very important meeting with a very important person. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi.